Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. We have a special episode for you tonight, which I'm going to tell you all about. It's a short episode. But before we get into it, I want to first encourage you to support our sponsor, Squarespace. We're going to have links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com under Talking Metal episode 489. Go use those links. Go get a website through Squarespace. So here we go. Squarespace sponsor, take one. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter offer code METAL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Remember, guys, it's offer code METAL, M-E-T-A-L, all caps. Thanks, dudes, and here we go. Episode 489 of the Talking Metal Podcast. What we're doing here tonight, guys, is giving you a sneak peek, not even a sneak peek because it's already up, a sample, I think is a better word, of a new podcast I recently launched with Mitch Joel and Mitch LaFon. It's called Metal Raps, and what we will do each week on Metal Raps, it's actually bi-weekly, I think is what we're going to do, is we will recap what Mitch and I have been up to recently with his podcast and my podcast, Talking Metal, and then we will also maybe talk about current metal news or metal events. And the thing that's real cool about Metal Raps is it doesn't take much of your time. It is 15 minutes every week. Sometimes it might be 10, sometimes it might be 20, somewhere in the ballpark. So approximately 15 minutes each week. We're already on the second episode. Please go subscribe to it on iTunes. Here's what we did with the first episode. We talked about Aerosmith. We talked about Ace Frehley. And check it out. So here is episode 1 of Metal Raps. If you like it, go subscribe to it on iTunes. And keep in mind, this is episode 1. So I think as the three of us get to know one another within the confines of the Metal Raps podcast, it will only improve. Not that it's bad. I think it's awesome. I really like the first episode. The second episode is quite good too. More talk on Paul Di'Anno in the second episode. So here it is. Anyways, episode 1 of Metal Raps.
Well, hey there, and welcome to a very new thing called Metal Raps, where we're going to spend 15 minutes speaking to two guys who know the metal scene probably better than I used to. And I say that because my name is Mitch Joel, and I used to be one of these guys. I used to run around and interview all these crazy rock guys. I helped publish several magazines. I was a contributor at Brave Words and Circus Magazine, and I published a whole bunch of my own. I used to work for foundations at their F Magazine as well. So for about 15 to 20 years, I spent interviewing literally the who's who and watching this industry unfold between the late 80s to the late 90s and beyond. And I thought, now that I shifted careers back into the marketing world and media world, that I might be twisted into coming back to this. And I was twisted back in by my my other good friend, my friend Mitch LaFon, who's the other Mitch, I guess. And I guess Mitch doesn't refer to me as the other Mitch, but Mitch LaFon from One-on-One with Mitch LaFon. Mitch, how are you?
I'm very well. You know, it's great that you're joining us on this. You know, I used to read you, and then we became sort of confrères at Brave Words. And yeah, we got to get you back in here.
It's important. You did it. And you thought, why bring just a Mitch and Mitch back when we can bring a Mark in too to create vocal confusion?
Right.
So why not have Mark Striegel from Talking Metal along for the ride as well? Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Mitch. And Mitch, how are you guys doing?
This is going to get awkward. Yeah, it's going to get awkward. And so what we wanted to do is really just spend a couple of minutes every week or two. We're going to sort of feel this out and see how it goes and talk just a bit about the conversations that we're having in the metal space and give everybody a sort of little sort of backstories, almost like a wrap-up show of the sort of metal podcasting world. We'll bring in others hopefully as we evolve and take this a bit further. But the idea is, you know, 15 minutes of sort of quick-fire conversation about what's happening in the music scene and the heavy music scene. So, Mitch, I'm going to start with you. Tell me a bit about what's been going on One-on-One with Mitch LaFon in the past week or so.
Well, you know, I've been having some great guests. I had Tom Hamilton of Aerosmith. And, of course, Tom is always great to talk to. And what was really interesting about this interview is I asked him about making new music and would he rather go old school like Lord of the Flies or keep going with the new stuff like Pink? And right away his answer was, no, man, I got to go Lord of the Flies. So he's itching to get back to that old Aerosmith sound. So hopefully we're going to get there at some point.
Yeah, I thought that was a brave question to ask. And I was excited by his response, you know, because it made me think, who is steering that band in direction of songs like Pink and the more pop avenue, if you will?
So what do you think is the story with what's going on with these guys? I mean, I was very much taken aback by his comment that, you know, he was sort of like, yeah, well, we'll sort of see if there's a new album. Like, you know, it was sort of like very off kilter. And for me, as a guy who sits on the periphery and I'm not as in-depth in the scene as you guys are, it was sort of weird. I would think that as a musician, you have it in you and you can't wait to make that next album. And it sort of felt to me like, well, you know, once they decide if we're going to do something, and I think we probably all know who the they are.
Yeah.
It's got to be weird. Did you have any thoughts, Mitch, on what you think is really going on there?
Well, you know, this is my third conversation with Tom, and he's let me know in the past that pretty much Steven Tyler, as we can all imagine, decides we're going to do an album and this is what it's going to sound like. And over the last couple of albums, Joe Perry and Brad sort of said, whoa, 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 let's try to steer it back to the more classic rocks, Toys in the Attic sound. But at the end of the day, Steven sort of imparts listen, I wrote Amazing, I wrote Crying. This is why you're rich now. So we're doing it my way. That's sort of the sense I got. And it's like, yeah, well, great, Steven. But the fans want to hear Toys in the Attic again. So
I'm sort of half joking when I say this, Mitch, too. But his voice really freaked me out. Like, I did not know that that's what he sounds like, or I don't remember him sounding like that. You were telling me it's because of when he was sick or?
Yeah, when he had cancer, part of the surgeries and the treatment, it's altered his voice. And, you know, it's hard to listen to him sometimes, but you have to have that sympathy for him. And when I got on the phone with him this time, the last two times I wasn't taping. This time I was taping and management got on the phone and said, oof, we're not sure about that. Let's check it. And right there on the call, they had a conference about whether they should approve it for being aired or not. And they came back and they said, yeah, go right ahead. But it is a concern.
And did he throat cancer? Is that what he was diagnosed with?
It was throat or tongue or something, some kind of oral cancer. And it's taken it. Now, what's amazing, though, is when I spoke to him for Music from Another Dimension, the last album, which he sings on, his voice sounded like that already. So it hasn't stopped him from performing and singing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, the sound of Eddie Van Halen's voice is also in a similar range as his. And Eddie Van Halen, of course, had tongue cancer, too. So that's whether or not that's the type of cancer Tom had, I'm not exactly sure. But
And people don't, you know, the one crazy thing, we're talking about cancer, not metal here, but the crazy thing about it is that you don't really know what the side effects are going to be of things like chemo and surgery. And everybody has a really different, goes through a very personal experience for those who know about it. So it's pretty amazing that he's sort of around and active and into it. And I do want to get to Mark and talk about Talking Metal. But the other part that I was really interested in is he was really, I'll use the word, extremely cautious about talking about Steve Tyler and him falling off the apple cart, as it were, in mm-hmm. terms of the last tour. And I got the sentiment from him that he was really down and disappointed about it. And not from the fact that like he had to stop touring for a little bit too, but more from that you could tell that like he was really down that they were letting the fans down.
Well, I really got a sense that they expected Music from Another Dimension to be this massive success. And instead, the fans went, oh, we think we're done. I think Aerosmith is over. And I think that really disappointed him because, you know, there are, you know, there's a Carrie Underwood song with, but you take that away, there's still a lot of good rock songs. There's at least a good 6 or 7 out of the 15. And fans just said, we don't care. This is not our Aerosmith. And I think they alienated both the younger generation that grew up on Pink, and they certainly alienated the older generation that grew up on Nobody's Fault. So,
but you know what? As an outsider, Mitch, I don't know. Like I'll tell you how I felt. I felt like there was a new album that came out because they were just trying to capitalize on the success that Steven Tyler was having with American Idol and mm-hmm. the fact that he was back in the public lexicon in a big way. And they probably felt like this is another chance to make a run at it. I think the real fans probably smelt it and realized they don't want to deal with it.
Yep.
And I'm also pretty sure that Steve Tyler and I think the entire Aerosmith camp might have overcompensated in terms of what they thought the general public would now drove over to Aerosmith because of the what seemed like the popularity of American Idol. When in fact, it is a show that was on the decline.
It really was. And, you know, what's amazing about that whole Carrie Underwood and the American Idol is when I did my interview with Tom for the album about a year ago, 2 years ago, he said that Steven snuck into the studio after hours, brought in Carrie without telling anybody and made wow. the song and then said, all right, folks, it goes on or. And it was like, huh, it's probably not a great way to have a happy family, don't you think, when you sneak people in and out?
Let's talk metal with Talking Metal, Mark. What's been going on your show?
Well, we've had some serious metal on. We had the ex-singer of Exodus, Rob Dukes, followed by an episode with the new singer of Exodus, Zetro, who was also the old singer of Exodus.
They wouldn't come on together?
No.
You should have really pushed, Mark. I think they would have if you just would have really tried.
But you got Zetro over at Heavy Montreal, and that's a whole festival we need to talk about at some point.
Sure. Yeah, I flew up for the day, really. I was up there for about 24 hours and hung out with Mitch all day at Heavy Montreal. We just had a blast seeing so many great bands. We did a podcast there. Mitch co-hosted the episode of Talking Metal with that featured Zetro from Exodus. And then I flew back to New York and got to interview Ace, former Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley.
Wow. So yeah, Ace, I mean, I watched a couple interviews with Ace and he is not looking or feeling good to me. Is that a mean thing to say?
Well, I think the interview I did with him, he was in such great spirits. He looked good to me. I mean, you know, he's heavier, he's older, he's a guy in his 60s now, but he seemed healthy, he seemed happy, his hair looked thicker than ever.
To what end though? Like why does a guy, what's the motivation for a guy like that to do an album? Is he considering touring? It just seems like, you know, he really sort of came. I mean, you know, it's a long and sordid history, but he was never really able to ascend post Kiss, and the struggles are, you know, as much as some people like individual songs that have come out from those solo efforts, whether it's Frehley's Comet or whatever else. I mean, it, and I'm not trying to downplay what Ace is and his power as a guitarist and what he did during that time. There's no, you can't undermine that, but it just, I grapple with why do an album? Why, like, what are you trying to hold on to here?
Well, I think there's probably a lot of factors, and I I would guess that money plays into it.
No, probably.
I mean, he had an offer from a record label to do a record. And I think, you know, there's been so much negative things said about the guy in books by the other members and in interviews with the other members. And I'm not just talking Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons. I'm talking about Peter Criss too. I think he has something to prove. And honestly, I you know, Mitch LaFon, we haven't really spoken about this, but no. I think the new record is incredibly strong. I really like it. It's heavier than he's been on, well, at least than he was on Anomaly. And I think even maybe heavier than some of the stuff he did back in the late 80s. And I think it's a really strong effort. And I'm not saying
it seems more focused.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's as strong or stronger than the latest Kiss records, but I think it's pretty close. And I think he's a lot of the stuff that Paul Stanley has been saying about him, that he can't play, he can't sing. Wow, on that record, it sure sounds like he can play and sing to me and write some good songs.
I might listen to it now. You guys are convincing me.
Yeah, I think no, but I really think that the competitiveness of Ace came out on this one, because it's been 7 years of Ace, you know, and because he's been sober for 7 years, but you still get Ace as a drunk, Ace as a drug addict, Ace as a loser, Ace as disorganized. And that's what the other camp keeps spewing out, whether it's Paul or Peter or Gene. And I think he just said, you know what? I got to prove something here. And if you listen to the album, okay, you know, the text, the lyrically, but musically, it sounds as though he wanted to get that Ace sound from the 70s back. And you've got those bends that you haven't heard in 20 years. And it just really sounds like the 1978 album, but with less good lyrics, but still a fun album.
Yeah, so, I mean, those lyrics back in the day, too, because I've read a number of reviews that have talked about the lyrics, but if you go back to his lyrics, let's face it, Rocket Ride didn't have the most, you know, genius lyrics in the
right.
world.
I don't know if we could really say any of them.
Neither did Love Gun, frankly. Listen, I don't not listen to an album because of lyrics, because listen, if you look at my record collection, I have Poison albums, White Lion albums, Cinderella. We're not talking, you know, the finest prose in the world here, but it sounds good. It moves me. I'm happy Space Invader came out. I do question putting on the Joker on the, you know, here's a guy who's supposedly sober going, I'm a toker, I'm a smoker. You go, maybe you should have picked another cover.
Right. And I know guys
well,
were trying
to. It's hard to watch and listen to interviews and realize that also it's like seeing the needle in the damage done, right? Like he could be sober. I don't know one way or the other. And again, I'm not trying to be negative. It's just in the interviews and stuff, he's always joking and sort of aloof a little bit. It's hard to sort of like watch and go like, is he really serious about being very passionate about what he's doing now with Space Invader? Is he doing it because, like you said, there's someone offered it some money and it was like, why not do it? I guess as I get older, and I'd love to know what you guys think about this, when these musicians come back, it could be Aerosmith, it could be Exodus, it could be Ace Frehley. We're all, to a certain degree, holding on to our youth.
Yes.
And we want to hear this music that really charged us. And we're rooting for these guys. We're hoping that they can come out with something that moved us the same way, like now, as it moved us when we were 16. I find more often than not that when it's not really driven by the artist's desire to create, it falls very flat. You know, a great example of the opposite of that to me is Deep Purple. I really found in a lot of the later years, the stuff that they have been doing the past decade has been some of their best stuff, because the guys seem to be getting together with people who just want to jam, and they're writing about what it's like to be in their 50s and 60s, and it feels relevant and fresh, and it ties nicely to the stuff I grew up with those bands, versus it feeling like, well, we need money, we got to go on tour. I feel like it's forced.
Yeah, well, I certainly felt that way about a couple of the last Kiss records, but yeah. No, but I'm really happy that Ace did this one. I really, you know, with Anomaly, I almost got the sense of what you were saying, like, oh, if I got to put something out to make a few bucks. But this one, there does seem to be a passion to it. And I think it translates to the music because it's a lot more fun, or can we say funner? Is that a word? It resonates a little more. But, you know, the problem with a lot of the new music is not the new music. It's the listener. I'm not 16. You know, I don't want to rock and roll all night and party every day.
You do, Mitch. Come on.
No, no.
I saw you.
I'd rather rock for like an hour and maybe take a warm bath and
have some ice water and then
have some ice water. Yeah, you know, sit down and watch the news. I can't do the all night thing anymore.
Mark, I'm curious. You know, you do get to sit down with a guy like Ace, current, you know, finally inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a legend, and obviously somebody you grew up probably really, you know, respecting and loving. What was your take out of that interview where you were like, okay, I saw something in Ace, I heard something in Ace that really sort of, you know, something of a highlight for you of that?
Well, there was a couple things that I'll hit upon quickly because I know we're running out of time here, but I just thought it was great. Like, even if you listen to the interview, I even left in where he's going, where he's testing the mics at the beginning of the interview, because, you know, he says testing, testing, testing. It was just that classic Ace voice. And I was just like, oh my God, this is Ace Frehley sitting right next to me doing this interview. And two things that stuck out in the interview to me that I really thought were pretty cool. One being when I asked him about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and being inducted, he had his stock answer, like, oh, it was a great honor. It's a shame we couldn't play. And then I said, well, have you spoken with any of the guys since the induction? And, you know, Kiss fans would probably think he would come back and say, oh yeah, Peter and I have spoken a few times. But no, he came back and he said, I've spoken with Gene, you know, I called him up and we reminisce about old times. And I thought that's kind of a major deal, because Gene, you know, is still in the band with Paul, who's obviously has some real issues with Ace. And I mean, from the interviews, it would seem that maybe Gene does too, but here it's been revealed that since the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he's shared at least one personal phone call with Gene, and they were just kind of shooting the shit, if you will. And I thought that was pretty major, and it also fit into line with some of the stuff that Ace has said, where he thinks maybe Gene could play bass on his next record, at least on a song. And before Gene had this big scandal about, you know, talking about depression or whatever, he deleted his Twitter account. He mentioned on his Twitter account that he had actually watched Ace on the Tonight Show and said that Ace did a fine job. So it seems as though maybe the relationship between Ace and Gene is stronger than some people might think.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just, I think that Gene is a character. And I think a character is somebody who's played in public. And then I think there's another side of Gene, probably when the cameras aren't rolling or the Twitter feed isn't live, that enables him to somewhat recognize where he is at in his life and his world and his pending mortality, as we all do at our age. And maybe thought, is it really worth it? Just because I'm not going to get up on stage with the guy doesn't mean I can't. We can't have that occasional chat. This is really cool doing this first show, Metal Raps. I think we are going to try and do it again with Mitch LaFon and Mark Striegel. And I think part of the discourse that we want to have in this is actually, hopefully when people listen to this, they don't see it as negative. I think it is important that we are critical of this, because this is what we're interested in. We want to dive a little bit deeper and crack the nut and go further into the conversations and see where each one gave and took. Yep. And hopefully people can check out both shows, One-on-One with Mitch LaFon and Talking Metal, to get the full story and the full conversations over there. So why don't we end this by you, Mitch, and then Mark, letting people know where they can connect with you online.
Yeah, listen, I'm easy to find. I'm at Mitch LaFon on Twitter, and you can also find me on Facebook, Mitch LaFon. And I just want to remind people, if you want to hear the Aerosmith interview I did with Tom, it's episode 37 of One-on-One, and you can get it on Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, and I also throw it up on YouTube.
Cool. And, of course, you can listen to both Mitch's show and my show, Talking Metal, on TalkingMetal.com or TalkingMetalDigital.com. They're on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, possibly iHeart soon. We're trying to figure that out. And I'm also on Facebook. There's a couple Talking Metal pages on Facebook. And I'm on Twitter. And the Twitter handle is Talking Metal.
And if you're interested in following all of my non-metal things,
absolutely,
you can find me at Mitch Joel. And I'm hoping that as we do more and more of these episodes, I will move from rusty to metal. So right. Thank you so much for checking this out and listening in.
Absolutely.